Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 386. This is Kevin DeFrango. With me on the other end is Shahid Abdul Hadi. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. It's that other member of Stunt Granny, not that jackass that Jerry talks about.
Oh.
Yeah, I caught last week's show driving to the car, and I had to hit pause a few times and just laugh and told Jeremy, like, you know what you did, right? Because he talked to me afterwards.
Oh, he talked to you about...
No, because he's talking about the show after I listened to it. He's like, I accidentally called Chris a jackass twice.
Oh. Yeah, well, that was kind of funny. I thought that we did go kind of light on him because as we were even kind of talking about before we started this show, I had false hope that the Raw that I was going to go to was going to be good. This week again, Raw, it was better than the one that I attended. It was going to be kind of hard to be worse than that.
Very true. I think the biggest issue with Raw is they're trying to tell stories, but I don't know if they're doing a bad job telling the stories or they just have the wrong pieces in the stories. It just seems like whenever I watch, like now, when I watch Raw, it just seems like it's a chore. Like, I have, like, I'm watching it because I have to talk about it, but I don't really enjoy watching Raw for the most part.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I mean, it's just always interesting, like, how the two shows can diverge the way that they do, you know, under the same production. I mean, they're happening back-to-back night. I mean, I guess they were before, but it makes a difference being live now.
Yeah.
You know, well, and another thing that we were talking about is that this week was easy to compare because they were actually in the same city for both Raw and SmackDown. So that certainly makes something of a difference. When you're in different cities, you can get different reactions, but you generally have the same type of fan if you're in the same location.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference between the two shows, and it's definitely noticeable this week, is the characters on Raw, like, the fans aren't really liking the way they're being pushed. Like, SmackDown, even, like the heels are heels. Like, they'll boo it, like, they'll cheer heels and boo heels, but they care about everybody on SmackDown. Like, they were, like, that's the biggest difference. Like, they care about the people, and they get invested in their matches. Raw is kind of like, you know, it says a lot that Braun Strowman was probably the most over person on Raw Monday night. Beating up a bunch of jobbers and getting treated like he's Bill Goldberg by the Chicago crowd was just surreal.
Yeah, a week after being the only highlight of Raw in Columbus here, Braun Strowman was definitely something of a bright spot again this week. And yeah, it was kind of funny that, I don't know, people kind of jumped on the bandwagon and we still don't know what Strowman can actually do.
I mean, it helps, like, I mean, he's a typical big guy, but he's athletic. Like, he moves extremely well for somebody that size, and they've been consistent pushing him as this monster, and they let him talk. And, like, they've been doing it week after week after week after week, and I think it was something originally to do that to get sympathy for Sami Zayn, which fans like Sami Zayn get sympathy for him, but people love monsters. Especially when they are booked like not idiots, like they're booked like he's booked like a smart monster, and beating up the Golden Truth and who was it? The Shining Stars.
Oh, the Shining Stars, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't think they were expecting a thank you Strowman chant, and then chanting Strowman's name like Goldberg, but yeah. Like, the two things I remember from Raw was basically Stephanie McMahon getting an enjoyable cheap shot in on CM Punk because those stupid chants they're still doing, which I was not expecting because normally they ignore those, and she waited like 2 seconds to say, like, keep chanting for 2 minutes and 18 seconds, and you'll last longer than CM Punk. I laughed so hard at that because, like, that's such a dickish thing to say, but yeah. That's something Stephanie McMahon probably enjoys saying because, one, she plays a dick. Two, she probably feels that way about CM Punk anyway. And I know they get and I'm personally tired of those hills every time they're in Chicago, they're chanting for that man. Like, let it go.
Yeah, it was kind of funny that earlier in the day I saw something about when exactly are the CM Punk chants going to start. And it was some type of a smart-ass poll that people were taking. And, yeah, they didn't waste any time, and in honor of this being the last Stunt Granny audio of the year, we can do a best and worst of. Is Stephanie's troll line the best troll line of the year to be thrown out there?
It's either that one or the one Randy Orton dropped about Brock Lesnar, talking about, you know, taking a trip to Viperville, no enhancements needed. When he first came back, those are the two. Or basically, Hitty Troll Live from SmackDown last week. Natalya saying, so Nikki Bella, that's why John Cena's never going to marry you, because my cat has more charisma than you.
Yeah, the whole sleeping with Dean Ambrose line was a pretty good one.
Yeah, like, SmackDown's had quite a few, or I know you guys talked about it. I wish I was on last week. Dasha interviewing James Ellsworth, basically, how do you feel to be a loser? Do you think you can overcome this? Like, why don't you just ask him, does he want to jump off a cliff because he's an ugly man? Like, SmackDown was so enjoyably petty last week, and to a certain extent this week, and it's fun where they're using reality to enhance the shows way better than Raw is. Like, Raw did it. They basically, you know, using Dusty Rhodes' death for a cheap boo on a team no one cares about.
Oh, yeah, on a team that they clearly have no faith in that can bear. Oh no, because they beat the Golden Truth. Who did the Shining Stars and? Oh, it was Darren Young and Bo Dallas that got beat up by Strowman.
Mm-hmm. And Bob Backlund. Yeah, because Anderson and Gallows came out. And I guess their new thing is calling people nerds. Like, yeah, I know they wish they were on SmackDown with AJ Styles. Like, that's just an example of how, like, it starts like after all. First match is the New Day and Cesaro and Sheamus. The New Day probably got the biggest or second biggest pop of the night. But it's hard. Like, it's funny. The New Day is still popular. They're still over. Chicago loved them. But I was rooting for Cesaro and Sheamus because they fought fair. New Day keep cheating. And it's weird, like, that setup, like, I'm surprised I'm rooting for Sheamus and Cesaro, but they're an enjoyable tag team, and they fight fair. They fight smart. Like, when they beat the New Day, they basically outsmarted the New Day after New Day was cheating for a month. And this week was, like, basically more the same thing. And it's just weird. Like, that's the whole thing where you feel conflicted rooting for. WWE makes you feel conflicted for rooting for certain people on Raw. And that's just, like, one example. And you can go down the line.
Well, it's kind of funny, though, because I feel like the WWE does. Because speaking of Anderson and Gallows, like, AJ Styles, they do everything to make that guy a cocksucker, but nobody is buying it.
He's too good. I make the joke now, like, he's the redneck Ric Flair. Like, and tonight, proof, but I will get to him talking about tonight, like, it's hard to boo a man that beats people clean and wrestles an awesome style. I mean, people know what AJ Styles went through, and like, it's just amazing that AJ Styles is where he is. Cause look at him and look at Samoa Joe, and just think about how their careers look. And like, you know, AJ Styles came from New Japan, and you know, wiped off 10 years of that TNA stink. No one would have thought he would have gotten where he was at the end of this year. And I remember how people felt when he lost to Chris Jericho at WrestleMania. Like, people were like, what's this about? They're just going to bury him. He's going to be in NXT by August. And now he's world champion, and he's the most popular person in WWE.
Yeah, I mean, and that topic was certainly broached on SmackDown itself. I would have a hard time arguing with AJ Styles having the best year out of anyone. Like, it was crazy that, you know, I mean, it started off really big at Royal Rumble, and it seemed like things were going the right direction, and that weird loss to Jericho was like a complete what-the-fuck moment, but as you pointed out, that's like a blip on the radar now.
Yeah, like, and it says a lot that probably the two people had the best years was AJ Styles and Chris Jericho. Like, that's, I don't know which one is more surprised. Like, AJ Styles is surprised because of all the stuff he had to deal with just by being short and being somewhere else and everything. But I don't think anyone would have guessed Chris Jericho would be where he was, because it's kind of like he comes in, he does his part-time thing, and leaves. And him being so awesome makes it almost impossible to boo Kevin Owens and basically ruin Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins as baby faces. Eric, on a week like Eric Nelson jumping in the thread now to trash Seth Rollins because the crowd doesn't like him is hilarious on so many levels. Because it has nothing, that's Raw's biggest issue on is,
oh,
they have baby faces that people don't want to cheer for, but they can't turn them heel because they have too many heels.
Yeah, the Rollins thing to me was more of a mismanaged than what could have been. but Roman Reigns has just been a John Cena case from the beginning, and I just don't see that one changing at all.
Yeah, it's the whole thing of you give the crowd what you think they want, but you give them too much of it. Because there's a reason why Roman Reigns turned babyface, because the crowd was cheering for Roman Reigns because he was like the cool, awesome member of the Shield. But instead of keeping that cool part, they pushed him like he was John Cena with longer hair. And just ruined him. And Seth Rollins' thing was, he was an awesome heel. He got hurt. If they want to turn him babyface, they should have turned him babyface as soon as he came back. Not try to push him as being a heel and being in between when the crowd wanted to cheer him. And then turn him babyface and put him against more popular heels. Like you said, like, it was a timing thing with him. And it's kind of like, yeah. And he shared space with Roman Reigns. It's tough. It's tough because it's kind of like Roman Reigns is a face that's getting this big push that no one likes. Seth Rollins is trying to get this same push, and people kind of like, they know he can wrestle, but they haven't given him a reason to cheer him for him beside Triple H screwed him. And Triple H hasn't been back since.
Yeah, and I mean, and they almost barely play up the screwed part at all. Like, they're doing a better job of focusing on that now, but, I mean, it's still weird that just nothing has been made of it. There aren't any clues. You know, Stephanie is kind of steadfastly denied being in league with Triple H. So, I mean, the story's gone nowhere for months, which isn't a good, you know, like, a story needs to go somewhere. And that story's gone nowhere. Like, Rollins has no material to work with. Like, and any of the people that he's beaten that he's kind of perceived as being with the authority haven't really had much to do with it either. like Kevin Owens winning the championship, like, you know, again, the last time Triple H was there, he was, Owens was as shocked as anybody that that he was helped out by Triple H. So, I mean, there's a lot of story there that just has gone completely untold.
Yeah, because the story is convoluted. Like, how are you going to sell Triple H and Stephanie are in cahoots like they're married? And everyone knows they're married. Like, so, and it's kind of like they want us to tell the story for them. Like, they have these four people, and you're supposed to root for Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns because they're the good guys. But Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho are more entertaining. And they're doing this whole buddy-buddy, best friends, are we going to be friends and stay friends? And it's almost like Austin Angle when during the whole thing when they teamed up after Triple H got hurt. But the difference is Jericho and Benoit were way more sympathetic than Rollins and Reigns are, so...
Yeah, because, well, yeah, I mean, Rollins just isn't sympathetic. Like, he hasn't, even his promos really haven't gone babyface enough. Like, he's still, like, within even the last couple of weeks, has kind of had, like, you know, the promos almost seem still slightly in the gray area. And it's just like, you guys still aren't doing him any favors.
Yeah, and it doesn't help Stephanie McMahon being there just stomping on people like Godzilla. And, like, she always, like, she almost always has to have the last word. She gets to be, like, I understand she's a heel and she's great at getting booed. But it gets to the point where she doesn't bother me as much as she bothers some people, but she can be overbearing. And Mick Foley being a doofus doesn't help. It's, and that's like that's another thing different between Raw and SmackDowns where most of the babyfaces either come off as petty or evil, or like dumb. Like not just the main event, even the whole stuff with Enzo and Cass and Rusev. Like,
oh.
Why would I cheer for Enzo? Like, Jeremy's right. Rusev is the good guy in all this. He's either fighting for his women's honor or he's being smart to keep luring this dummy in. And Cass fighting his buddy's battles because he didn't listen to him and chase after a girl that wasn't his. Like, why am I supposed to feel sympathy for Enzo? If Enzo did that to me, I would have did the same thing Rusev did. So, no thanks. And good for Jinder Mahal to get a check. Like, I wasn't expecting that. Or him inheriting Wade Barrett's abs all of a sudden, because I don't remember him being in that good of shape until this week.
Oh, yeah. I guess, you know, I mean, Rusev kind of hasn't done much, and they've wanted to keep this as kind of a tag team thing, so I guess I can understand bringing in Mahal, like, I don't know if Rusev really needs much else with his act, so I hope this is kind of a temporary thing.
Yeah. And
but yeah,
the biggest thing is, I know why they push Kaz. Like, when Kaz is being normal, when he's just talking backstage, or when he's doing WWE shop commercials, he's fine. When he's cutting promos, he sounds like Frankenstein's monster, like, and I am going to do this because you stepped in the wrong ring. And he was, especially Monday, he was just spitting in the mic. And like, why does it sound like Sylvester the Cat with a concussion? Like, get this doofus off the mic. It was horrible. Like, more horrible. Like, it's just... I talk like this because English is not my first language. How you doing? And it does not help that he's there with Enzo. Like, Enzo blows him off the mic, but Enzo is small and he can't wrestle. And they want to push Kaz, so they have to have Kaz talk. But Kaz can't talk the way they want him to. Like, he makes Roman Reigns sound like Ric Flair.
Uh, Oh man, that could be the comparison of the year for Stunt Granny. But yeah, I mean, Reigns is more the, well, he's at least acceptable on the mic. I guess I haven't found Big Cass to be a horrific train wreck, but there's been nothing about him that's been impressive at all in the mic department. And I mean, I'm not sure that he wrestles any better than Enzo, which is another curious thing.
It just looks better because he's bigger. Like, and he's not even imposing. He's just tall and in shape. He can, like, he's a taller, skinnier Tess. If that makes sense. Oh. Like, you know, he's athletic. He can move. I don't know how tall he is in real life. He's probably like 6'9", 6'10".
Yeah, he's 6'9".
But, you know, he's built like a straw. Like, he's in shape, but he's not imposing. Like,
yeah, he's not Braun Strowman.
Yeah, like, Braun Strowman looks like a... Like, if they were in a ring, Braun Strowman looked like he would probably break him in half with no problem. And you can't have Braun Strowman doing his monster thing and then talking about how imposing Big Cass is because he's taller. Like, if we were playing basketball, that's one thing. But wrestling, like, you can't do that on the same show with him and Brock Lesnar and Goldberg.
Wow, yeah, I didn't think about how many big bodies they have on Raw there. I mean, two of them are part-timers, but still.
Yeah, and it's not like, and not only that, like, it's a lot of big people, like, either tall or, like, imposing. Sheamus, Rusev, Big E, like, Roman Reigns isn't small either, like, so.
Nah, he's a big boy.
Yeah, so, Kaz would stand out more if he was on SmackDown. Because SmackDown tends to have more normal-sized people, for the most part, that's full-time. Like, Raw has a lot of guys that's either husky, big, or both, who can also talk and who can wrestle. But I know it's kind of a whole thing. Cass has the look. He's not ugly. He can move. You know, Vince likes tall people and everything. But, yeah, like, thanks for no thanks. I'd rather hear Braun Strowman beating up people than Kaz marble mouthing through a promo.
Well, and it's kind of funny. Like, to me, you were talking about the looks department, and I don't think Kaz is that good looking of a guy. So I don't know why they think that might be a thing for him. And to go into maybe one of my worst angles, to me, is Neville coming back and blaming the fans for his troubles. I'm like, oh man, is this what you have to go with right now? Is this the script they gave you?
You know what? I love it so much because it's almost like he's talking to Vince McMahon. Because, like, that's who he really, like, whenever he says to fans, I'm thinking he means Vince, because I won't lie. All the stuff he was saying, I was thinking it deep down because he has that thick accent. He looks like the Hobgoblin. Like, he looks weird.
Yeah, he looks like a hobbit and or an elf. One of the two.
Like, he looks like an evil elf, basically. And especially when he grows that beard, and it's kind of like all the stuff they talk about holding him back. It shouldn't be an issue, but you know it's an issue. And at least they're letting him talk about it. They're letting him talk. Like, he's talked more in his past 2 weeks than he did since he left NXT. And I don't know how long he's been on the main roster. So him being
at least a year.
Him being the cruiserweight bully that's pissed off because he didn't get a fair shake just because of the way he looked and talked. Is honest. Like, watching him down on 205 Live, like, I like this Neville because he can book, like, he can hang with anybody cruiserweight this division, but he looks bigger than all of them. And he looks like he can beat up all of them, you know, easily. And he's pissed off. And he should be pissed off. So, how they got there is, but I actually like I like the destination. It's the whole thing where I like the destination way more than the journey.
Yeah, the Raw has certainly had a lot of those moments over this year. I definitely think the women's championship with Sasha and Charlotte early on was kind of that way. Or was it? It might have been before that. I'm trying to remember.
No, exactly. My worst one was the Roman Reigns Rusev nonsense. And I think when they were talking about the wedding pictures and everything, and Roman threw the cake at Lana, that whole 3 weeks of them feuding and lead to like 30-minute matches before the pay-per-view. Like, I did not need to see Roman Reigns and Rusev wrestle like Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. Like, no. They had like 2 or 3 commercial breaks. And it was more than once, and they made Roman Reigns look like a dickhead, and he's supposed to be the baby face.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's another one of those angles with Rusev that has they have not portrayed very well. Like, yeah, Reigns was the one that interrupted the wedding celebration with no real reason to do so. You know, Rusev hadn't done anything to him up to that point. So, yeah. Yeah, there was some bad stuff going on there.
Although it did lead to 2 good farts. Rusev with the collage of his family, including his mom or grandma that was a ping pong champion? Like, I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, and him talking about Roman Reigns, him and his 75 cousins around a campfire, eating turkey legs and mayonnaise on them. Like, good old Samoan racism. I haven't heard that in a while. So I felt bad for laughing, but I laughed my ass off when he said it because it just came out of nowhere. And he's had a history of talking about Samoans because he called Rock a piece of American garbage when the Rock got his face like 2.5 years ago.
Oh.
And it goes back to, like, I know the joke was when Rusev first came, he was beating up all the black wrestlers for like a good 2 months. So good long-term booking, WWE, when you least expect it.
Yeah, well, it is kind of funny that Rusev has been one of the few characters that's, he's kind of, well, more Strowman is like him, where he still hasn't had a point where you're like, oh, he's being the dick in the situation. Like, he's never done that the whole time. But he's still presented as a heel. And, well, actually the fans go along with it because he is a foreigner.
Yeah. Like, he's overbearing. But he's never, like, ever since he started feuding, like, the whole stuff with Cena and Paxton, he's never really been the bad guy. It's kind of like, you know, Ziggler was being a dickhead, trying to, you know, steal his girl, getting his business, and that nonsense with him and Lana when she's dressing like this is in Greece. And then the stuff with Rome, you know, the whole League of Nations nonsense that was just a waste of time. Oh, and then the stuff with Roman Reigns, where, like, he didn't do anything to Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns getting his business. And then, and so it's always involving somebody getting his business because they like Lana. Like, he has the disadvantage of having a hot wife, and he has to keep fighting for her honor. And she's playing along, setting these jokers up. You would think people would learn a lesson by now to leave this woman alone.
No, they haven't at all. And, it's mostly led to poor results. I suppose Roman Reigns did go over in that one, so.
Mm-hmm. I will say, what was it, 3 weeks ago when they had like 4 skits with Enzo and Cass and Rome and Lana and Rusev, where it was, and Ric Flair was involved, was enjoyable because it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And normally having more than two skits is disaster, but everybody played their roles so well, it was just enjoyable. Because you knew where it's like everybody played their roles and it fit, and you knew exactly where it's going to lead. Like, Kaz kept telling her, like, leave this girl alone, she's bad news. Enzo can't help it because he's a ladies' man, and yada, yada, yada. Of course, Ric Flair's going to let him hold the limousine because that's Ric Flair.
Right.
And then Lana sent him up, sending a Snapchat picture and everything like that to lead him to a hotel room where Rusev is just waiting. Like, I'm sure this has happened on Craigslist before to people in real life. I was thinking the whole thing. And the difference between Raw and SmackDown is SmackDown does stuff like that on a consistent basis. When Raw does it right, you're surprised because Raw usually does it wrong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is pretty much a summation of things that have happened. I mean, because even I was surprised on SmackDown tonight. I like the story with Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss and La Luchadora. You know, it's one of those stories that it's just like, oh, this makes complete sense. You know, Becky did it to screw over Alexa in some ways at least, the week before. And to have it come back and haunt her with a new mystery woman is... It works well.
Yeah, that whole setup was awesome. And her distracting the ref by dislocating her elbow, I was like, I had to rewind it because, like, I know I didn't see what I just saw. Like, her elbow was like this, like Martin Riggs from Lethal Weapon. Like, her elbow was pointing at the wrong angle, and the ref's looking at that. Everybody's looking at that, and then La Luchadora, you know, distracts Becky Lynch, puts her in the post, and then catches the DDT, gets the win. Then they interview Alexa Bliss, like, who's this girl? I don't know, she looks like that might have been Sasha Banks. And they're like, Sasha Banks is nowhere that size. That woman's a lot bigger than Sasha Banks. Oh, I guess it was Nia Jax. And they walked away with a straight face and just walked away. I like, it's so perfect from the beginning because it's built like the past couple weeks, you know, her avoiding wrestling Becky because of a fake injury. Daniel Bryan saying, you know, I can talk to the trainers too. I know if you're injured or not. Becky Lynch dressed up like a luchador, which has traditional SmackDown. Shout out to Edge and Christian. And Alexa Bliss basically getting payback, and now you wonder who the girl is. And then that'll be a thing. And it's like, that's what SmackDown does. They take past history and build on it.
Oh, sorry about that. My wife left the door open, and Cayenne, my boxer, decided to walk into the kitchen.
Yeah, like SmackDown. SmackDown was full of smart booking and surprising finishes because the tag match, I was gobsmacked in a good way how it ended because I didn't think American Alpha was going to win. And I was assuming if they're going to win, they're going to save that for Mania, and them to win, and basically win kind of clean, and it fit into the whole, you know, Luke Harper, Randy Orton thing, because it's kind of like, that's not the first time they've accidentally had issues.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting that they mentioned, like, I didn't think anything of it, honestly, at the start, like, just because... I think we've been talking recently, whether it's with Jeremy or with Chris, that they seemed pretty consistent with keeping Randy Orton on Team Wyatt, and they hadn't really been having any problems. So I'm like, oh, okay, they're just gonna have a long title reign, and something's gonna brew in the meantime. And then all of a sudden, they have a blow up. Of epic proportions, I would say, considering that they lost the titles.
Yeah, but it wasn't like blatant. They played away like it looked like an accident.
Yeah.
But it's not the first time that happened. And it's kind of like, you know, Bray Wyatt came and stepped in and fixed it and everything like that. But I don't think anybody was expecting American Alpha to win. It's fun. Like, this was almost a pay-per-view, the way SmackDown was set up. Because they basically had three title matches. And, you know, promo talk to sit like John Cena coming back and basically cutting a dickhead heel promo in a Chicago crowd, as he should. And I like this John Cena because he's at the point where I don't care. I can say what I want because I'm John Cena and I'm still John Cena. And like Chicago, in that Chicago crowd, you might as well cut that promo instead of trying to be. See, if that was on Raw, that'd have been like, you know, I'm going to try to be the baby face and follow the script regardless of what the crowd was. SmackDown's kind of like they go with the crowd.
Yeah.
And that was a good setup from the beginning. Basically saying, you know, I know what people have been saying about me. I'm going to Hollywood. I don't got what it takes. And yada, yada, yada. Kiss my ass to steal my show. I'm getting my title back. Like, he said something that Triple H would have said like 8 years ago and would have got vilified for, more or less.
Yeah. I mean, it did crack my, it cracked me up too. I was just like, oh, good for him. You know, just say fuck off. I've been great for this long. I don't give a shit if you're booing anymore. And I mean, they even, SmackDown even did a quality job, really, of pointing out the Cena fans cheering in the crowd tonight. Just to reinforce that there are, in fact, people that do cheer for him.
Yeah. Like, the crowd was rambunctious like they were on Raw, but they cheered for the baby faces. It wasn't, but they liked who they liked. Like, you know, they loved AJ Styles and cheered for him, but they liked Becky Lynch and cheered for her. They liked the they loved the Wyatts, but they liked the American Alpha. It's kind of like, you know, it wasn't a whole, we're just rejecting the baby faces. Like, if they thought you were good, you won't get the cheers. If not, you won't get the boos. And I did laugh the whole setup with Miz, Renee Young, and Dean Ambrose. Because first one, the first girl comes out to interviews, and they're like, no, I'm just going to talk to that woman announcer that smacked me. And then Renee Young comes there, like, with the just stink face, like, I don't even want to be here. What's this asshole has to say? Gotta hear Maurice getting in her face. And then Miz doing his whole Miz thing. And then Dean Ambrose sneaking out of nowhere. Renee Young had that smirk. Like, my boyfriend's about to beat your ass. You don't even know it. And him getting the walkie-talkie and doing the all clear at the end. Like, Dean Ambrose is the master of the improv. Like, little stuff like that makes him awesome.
Yeah, he always comes up with something in the role, quote unquote, that he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, that was one of those things where, I mean, that segment really wasn't all that long. Like, you were talking about how the setup was. I felt like by the time the tag team match was over, they were like a half hour into the show.
Oh, I timed it. It was 45 minutes in.
Okay, okay. Yeah,
Cena talked for about maybe 5 to 10 minutes, and then they wrestled for probably like 25 plus two commercial breaks.
Yeah, I mean, there were short promos and then long matches because, I mean, the women got a commercial break. Well, and of course, the main event with Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler and AJ Styles. And to go back to best and worst of, has there been anyone to close the year better than Baron Corbin at this moment?
I was not a fan of his when he first came. I just thought he was a greasier, uglier version of Tess.
Yeah.
Like, he was always moping, saying, you know, I deserve this, and yada yada. Like, I could not stand Baron Corbin. He he has stepped his game up. Like, he's this grouchy heel that feels like, you know, he's, but the thing is funny about him is, like, he feels wrong. Like, his whole thing is, he did that stuff with Kalisto because he figured he's doing a favor, because nobody wants to cheer small guys flipping. They want to see people like me. And I don't give a damn about the cruiserweight. Like, I did Daniel Bryan a favor by screwing Kalisto. Like, little stuff like that. He's been on Talking Smack a lot, and he's always, you know, talked a good game there. And that match, that main event was awesome. Like, that was a great match. And Baron Corbin hung with two great workers. Like, you know what AJ Styles can do. And for all of Dolph Ziggler's faults, Dolph Ziggler can always wrestle. Baron Corbin hanging with them and not seeming out of place, kudos. And they probably went, what, 25 minutes?
Yeah.
And they were working their ass off. Like, that spot at the announce table was when Styles hit the leg drop and Ziggler hit the elbow at the same time to put Corbin through the table. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that put over Corbin is much as anything else has. Like, these last, I've just been surprised the last 2 weeks. Like, in both matches, he's really hung with his opponents. And it was completely unexpected. I mean, it was unexpected last week, and I guess I expected him to revert to form this week. But, man, he really played his part well, and Ziggler and Styles bumped like hell.
Yeah, to, and it says a lot, because we saw when Ziggler and Corbin first feuded, they had a couple matches, and it was horrible. It was like, if Dolph Ziggler can't get a good match out of this guy doesn't have a chance. Like, those matches got crapped on when they feuded in the beginning of the year. So,
yeah,
to see how far they came from then to now, where it's kind of like, he held his own, and it was like, yeah. Because it's tough doing that. Like, you don't have to, if you can do that, if you can wrestle as well as, if you can hold your own against great wrestlers, you can be considered a great wrestler. Like, Miz is in the same boat where it used to be. You could tell that Miz was not on the level of the guys he was in the ring with, depending on who they were. And now it's like, you know, Miz may not be Daniel Bryan, but Miz can have a match with anybody and not seem out of place. That's really all you have to do to be a main eventer. And it's been a lot. And I think SmackDown's done a good job of putting people in positions and giving them reps to get to that point. Let's think about it. Carmella basically got over through her personality on SmackDown. Just by, you know, cutting promos and all that stuff with Nikki Bella and stuff with Natalya. And even now, we're hurting James Ellsworth. JBL losing his mind at that filled me with so much joy. He's like, what the hell am I watching? Like, is she blind? Why is she with this man? And he's told me the heel announcer, but like, even JBL has his limits. Like, what are you trying to sell me on this? And yeah, like, little stuff like that. Like, Alexa Bliss would have not been where she was if they were all dumped on Raw and it was just one woman division. Like, her being by herself and getting the time and basically taking Eva Marie's spot is the reason why she is now. So it's funny how little things like that happen. Like, if Eva Marie doesn't get suspended, the women's division probably looks a lot different than how it looks now.
Yeah, and I'd have a hard time believing that it would be as good as it does. Now, just because, I don't know how long Bliss has been wrestling, because she's pretty young herself, but she certainly seems to have more, I shouldn't say seems, she 100% has more of an athletic background than Eva Marie does.
Yeah, it's they have different, I think what helps is, one, Alexa Bliss is younger, so she's able to learn. Like, they're both athletes. But it's kind of like Eva Marie was like a college athlete, but that was a long time ago. And it's almost where she's clunky because she has to think for every, like, she hasn't had a lot of experience. So everything she does is like, she's counting in her steps. Like, 1-2 bounce, 1-2 this. Like, she has to think about what she does. And you can tell she's thinking about what she does so she doesn't make mistakes. So, like, when she does a move, it looks competent, but it takes 3 seconds when it should take one. You know, like, Alexa Bliss isn't doing anything out the ordinary, but she's, you know, she knows her limitations, and she works, you know. Right. You don't have to do a – I've always said you don't have to do a lot of moves. You just have to do stuff that makes sense and make it look real, and you'll be fine. Because Dean Ambrose does 5 moves, and one of them is a punch, and one of them is a kick, and no one complains. So it's not about how many moves you do. It's about when you do them and making the people care. And
yeah.
And that's, SmackDown's the king of – doing that with people, like making you care about people you shouldn't care about. Just the fact that James Ellsworth is still a thing in 2016 and soon to be 2017. Like, we remember when that whole squash stuff started. That was what we like to put Braun Strowman over. And Braun Strowman is just getting over from that. James Ellsworth has had title matches and has got a job. None of those other jobbers who did that got a job. Like, you know, that jobber that Nia Jax beat up on Raw. I did laugh at that because Nia Jax was such a dick about he needed to get better role models. And then dropped the leg on her.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, at least Nia Jax is starting to show something of a personality. Which is something that is sorely missed on the women's women on Raw for the most part.
Yeah, it's almost like they're. It's not that they don't have personality. It's too much of like they're riding the coattails of their NXT stuff. It's like it's amazing. Like Sasha and Charlotte have had great matches. But for whatever reason, I care more about the SmackDown women than the Raw women. Even though the Raw women have had better matches, it's just... I know it's historic, but stop telling me. Like, it's almost like, shut up. And it's weird because it is historic. You've never had a women's feud on, like, WWE main TV where the wrestling's been at this level and they've got this much attention. But they beat you over the head with it, like, oh, you're seeing history. I know, shut up. Like, just let me see it. And it hurts because Sasha Banks is a better heel than face, but the crowd wouldn't let her be a heel. So she's a face, but she's not. Bayley's a better face than her. But then Charlotte was a face, but she's a better heel than face. And they let her be a heel, and she's an awesome heel, where it's kind of like Sasha stuck between a rock and a hard place. And it's kind of like they don't. They know they don't know what they want to do with Bayley. They don't know what they want to do with Sasha. And they know what they have with Charlotte. And you got Nia Jax floating around. So it's a weird spot where people kind of, the crowd wants one thing and it may not be the best thing.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how there are times when the WWE's like, we'll go along with the crowd. And then there are other times where it's just like, nah, fuck them. We're going to go stay our course. And the Sasha Banks, I mean, they'd kind of brought her in, I guess, to me originally as more of a heel. But, you know, the crowd continuing to chant for her made them go face with her. And it's one of those instances where you wish the WWE was as stubborn as, say, oh, they are with Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins.
And it's funny how that whole thing started because the argument before was like, that's when they first came up, Nikki Bella was a champ, and people were making an argument like, oh, she only has the belt because of nepotism. Charlotte should have the belt. Which is hilarious when you think about that in hindsight. Like, somebody you could use a nepotism to defend the daughter of Ric Flair. Like, I mean, I know Nikki Bella's dating John Cena, but we're talking about Charlotte. Like, you know who her dad is. You know who one of her dad's best friends are. It's kind of like, and you see how Charlotte looks. Like, they are not holding back Charlotte. And I remember the whole thing. She came, she was a face, and people saying, well, maybe they're pushing her too soon. And they turned on Charlotte and saying, you know, Sasha Banks should have it. Then Charlotte turned heel, became an awesome heel. Sasha Banks became a face. And then people were like, oh, I don't know about this. And it didn't help. Becky Lynch was a better face than Sasha. But everybody wanted Sasha to be a face. That's been Sasha's problem, where the crowd loves her, but they have faces better than her. Like, Becky Lynch and Bayley are more sympathetic. Yeah. And Jeremy all the time says that Sasha doesn't come off. She's walking around talking about how good she is, like how she's the boss and she's the best, and she runs the place. It's kind of like only The Rock can get away to talk like that and still be a babyface.
Right. Well, you've got to kind of... Well, a lot of the heels that turn babyface end up getting a swagger similar to that. And Sasha hasn't presented that part in the WWE itself yet. It's been on display in NXT, but her and, well, yeah, she just hasn't gotten that much promo time, even, really. You know, Jeremy and I were talking about it. I mean, I guess I'm glad that Charlotte ended up with the belt, because she has a character, at least. Sasha Banks is still just kind of there.
Like, she's awesome because she says she's awesome, and everybody tells us how awesome she is. But when she cuts promos, it just seems clunky when she's a babyface. Either it's just false arrogance, or she's about to cry. Like, those are the two extremes for her when she's a babyface cutting promos. It's kind of like, I've had these great matches, and I'm almost overwhelmed, and I'm wearing Eddie Guerrero's boots, and yada, yada, yada. Or it's kind of like, you know, I'm the boss, and you a bitch, and I'm going to do this because I'm the boss. And but it's funny, like, it's easy to have sympathy for her compared to Charlotte, because Charlotte's walking around like a damn Nazi. Like, I'm better than you because my dad has superior genetics, and I'm just physically superior than everybody walk around. That's kind of, it works when she's a heel. I remember when she was saying that when she was a face, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know if you should be saying stuff like this. You know, you this big, tall, blonde girl saying you're getting over because you have superior genetic abilities. Like, yeah, maybe you should cut a different type of promo.
Yeah, and it's worked better as a heel than it has as a face.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to think of, were there any other big matches? What was the other match on SmackDown?
It was only three matches. It was the tag match, it was the women's match, and it was the main event. Yeah, time flew by. Like, it's funny, you don't even think about it. It's kind of like it seemed like a lot of stuff happened, but really, like, you had the three matches. You had the skits involving The Miz and Dean Ambrose. You had the John Cena promo. You had Nikki Bella talking about what Natalya said. And then after SmackDown ended, you had Neville come out and basically cut a promo hyping 205 Live. And that was it.
Yeah, which I still have done no watching of.
Yeah, like, it was just simple. He came out, you know, saying, I'm doing this for the reason. I'm going to prove why I'm the king of the cruiserweights. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's like 30 seconds. And it hyped up 205 Live and just went to it. Like, it was a good setup because I think that's the first time they've done that.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. They're stopping short of saying that the cruiserweights are on SmackDown, too. I love that they act like it's a different product.
Mm-hmm. But that's the beauty of SmackDown. SmackDown zooms by and it flows, and when it's over, it's kind of like, it's funny when we have the threads, more people seem to talk about Raw than SmackDown, but SmackDown's better. I don't know if it's just a night thing where people used to Raw being a flagship show, and they're more likely to watch it Monday than watching wrestling on Tuesday. But I have, since the draft, I think, for the most part, SmackDown has consistently been better than Raw. Like, and it hasn't even been close.
Yeah, like I said, I think there was enough good episodes of Raw before I went to go, oh, I'm not going to see a terrible show. And I'm like, oh, crap. They just reverted back to form.
Yeah, because you're running into a whole thing, like you said, with your show. It was a, talking segments and stuff is tolerable if they're funny and you're at home. But I've gone to Raw, too. That is a drag if they're not, if you're there live, especially if it's not enjoyable. I'm like, why am I watching this backstage stuff? They talking about the stuff with Enzo and Jinder Mahal and Darren Young, you know, the human resource crap. Like, I can just imagine how this is going in live. Like, I would have went and got some popcorn or went home.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's 3 hours, not counting whatever happens, like, you know, before Raw, like, and dealing with parking, and yeah. I'm going to Royal Rumble. I think that show is, what, going to be 4 hours at least? I wouldn't be surprised if it's five, the way WWE's treating it like it's Super Bowl Sunday with these pay-per-views. Like, I don't want to be sitting somewhere for 6 hours. I don't care what it is.
Well, yeah, I would imagine that Royal Rumble will be treated like they have SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and WrestleMania. Entirely too much content, so I would wager that they can actually put on 6 hours worth of content for you if you do choose
like,
to
I'm
sit
sure
for that
long.
I'm sure
it's going to be a great show. You have the Royal Rumble where, you know, you're going to have, you know, Goldberg's going to be there. You know, Brock Lesnar's going to be there. You assume some NXT people are going to be there. You got AJ Styles wrestling John Cena. You got Roman Reigns wrestling Kevin Owens. So at the very least, you know, you're going to have, like, entertaining matches. But I know they're making a concerted effort to make the big four, like, big deals. Like, before it was just WrestleMania for the longest. And then they start doing it with SummerSlam. And now they're doing it with Survivor Series and the Rumble, where it's like, you have NXT there, you have the pay-per-view there, you have Raw, and you have SmackDown. Like, you make it like a four-day thing. And that's great that they're making a big deal and getting more people to fly there, but that's still a lot of wrestling to sit there and actually watch. Like,
yeah, it that WrestleMania is always a tough one.
Oh God, why I didn't go. That's why I'm not going next year. Did I ever tell you about my experience at WrestleMania in Dallas?
I don't know which experience.
Oh my God, that day did not end. It felt like it went on forever. Like, we got there, and it was like a 2 hour pre-show.
Yeah.
With two matches, and like, the women's match was maybe 10 minutes, I remember, like, that was Brie Bella's last match, and Eva Marie was the most hated person at WrestleMania. Like,
yep.
Hearing, like, the stadium wasn't full yet. It might have been like maybe half full, two thirds full. Hearing 65,000 to 70,000 people Buddhist woman for just existing was surreal, and her eating it up, and I think they got mad because she didn't make any mistakes, you know, like that. And Ryback, Kalisto, poor went out for Ryback, but that show just, it felt like it went for, like, by the time you got to the main event with Roman Reigns and Triple H, people were ready to go home, and that match went, what, 35-40? Like, WrestleMania was like five hours long, and it ended 30 minutes late. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, that was like, that was a tough one. This past one in Dallas was it's up there, because I mean, it was one thing to have 1 hour preview or, you know, like a match or two in the hour leading up to it. Now they're doing, like you said, like they were two short matches with commercials in between. And I know that I was there for the first match. I'm like, oh my God, man. I can't.
Yeah, it's okay. You can't have a 2 hour pre-show and you have two matches that last a total of 25 minutes. And then you have this 5 hour show, and then the show ends late. Not like, you know, 5 minutes late or, you know, 2 minutes late, 35 minutes. Like, when Stephanie McMahon came out to introduce Triple H, it was like 5 to the hour. I'm like, are they going to have a 6-minute match? Like, what is going on? Like, how can you not time this out? And that's the first WrestleMania I went to where I got aggravated, where I was ready to leave. I was ready to leave. Like, I didn't care who won. And that kind of led me where I was going to go this year. I'm like, I can't go through that again. Like, Orlando is not a nice enough city. I don't care if Shinsuke Nakamura is out there with 100 people playing the violin. I'm not trying to be in Orlando for 8 hours watching wrestling in that heat with wrestling fans who don't believe in soap. Like, thanks, but no thanks. I will watch at home this year.
Yeah, I mean, Orlando was not, since we did Orlando once already, I was not really excited about heading to Orlando for WrestleMania again. And I wasn't even thinking about that experience. Like, half the time now, like, I want to go to the place that WrestleMania's at because I haven't been there. You know, that's more of a draw than just about anything else.
Yeah, like, this will be my first year in 6 years that I haven't gone, and it's funny. I think Miami is the only one that I've rewatched to hear the commentary, so this will be the first one in a long time I see hear the commentary for it. So I'm just wondering how different it'll be. And yeah, it's kind of like, it's Orlando, and I went to the one in Miami. I'd rather be in Miami than Orlando any day of the week. And I'm going to Royal Rumble this year. And more than likely, I'll probably do Survivor Series because it's in Houston. So it might be, I'd rather just go to like some of the other big fours and spend less money because I can drive to San Antonio. Like, flying and getting a hotel and getting WrestleMania tickets and NXT and then the Raw after the show, now the SmackDown after Mania's thing. It's like,
oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh my God. SmackDown after Mania.
Yeah, like that's the thing now. Like the SmackDown.
Oh my God.
The Raw after Mania was bad enough. Now the Raw and SmackDown where they're double dipping. I'm like, I'm not trying to be in a hotel for a week. That money adds up. Like,
this is not free, guys.
I'm not a type to stay like a Motel 6 where it's like 50 a night. Like, usually the hotel that I've been to, especially like WrestleMania, they bump up the price. It's been about $150 to $250 a night. Doing that for 5 nights. No thanks. In addition, like flights and the tickets. Yeah, the last, when I went to Miami and when I did San Jose, I spent a good maybe, I want to say, close to $3,000 each. Total, like, you know, between flight, hotel, tickets, food. Like, yeah. I'm like, that's a lot of damn money. Like, I'm glad I make money, but I'm like, I could use that for
a lot of other things.
That's almost 3 months of mortgage, basically.
Yeah, well, that is definitely not 3 months of mortgage for me, but that's okay. My number will probably get there soon enough.
Don't be in a rush.
You know, we've kind of talked about best and worst of the year at least a little bit. I think it would be remiss to not say that, or at least put a question mark at the end of best angle of the year, broken Matt Hardy.
It's either that or Goldberg coming back. For it's 2016 has been a weird year. When you just think about who are the people that we talk about in wrestling, like Chris Jericho, AJ Styles, Matt Hardy, James Ellsworth, and Bill Goldberg. Those names make no sense without a whole lot of context. Like, Matt Hardy becoming a thing. I watched Impact, and I'm like, I'm watching a woman wrestle a drone. What the hell is wrong? I'm like, I'm a grown man with a child. What the hell is wrong? Like, I'm watching a 2 year. How old is Maxwell? 1, 2?
I would hope it. Well, at least one.
I'm watching a baby in a wrestling ring pin somebody because a gardener tased someone. Like, and I'm watching this with no problem. I'm like, okay, well, he used the taser. I guess it makes sense. And I thought about, like, what does that say about us? I mean, we talk about, like, the logic you don't use in Raw where how come they don't push Roman Reigns the right way. But we can watch Impact, and we can watch people say, oh, you know, women can't wrestle a drone because it violates North Carolina wrestling law. I didn't know that was in the rule. I didn't know Bill Watts put that in the rule book that women couldn't wrestle drones. I know you couldn't jump off the top rope, but I didn't think he thought that far ahead. And we have newscasters talking about, oh, you know, the man fell in the volcano and popped out. Or a sunset flip or some nonsense. And the fact that we're talking about this and the Laker rejuvenation and people getting murdered and I'm gobsmacked where I don't know how we got here, but it's kinda like we got here and people eating it up and love it. And you guys ask, is it good or is it so bad it's good? I don't know how to describe it, to be perfectly honest. Like, it's got entertaining, it, yeah. And it has no right to be.
Yeah, that's it. That's another good way to sum it up. Because, yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff, you know, is out of pure fantasy. I certainly think, even though I haven't seen any of it, I feel like, you know, a lot of wrestling fans, you included, Lucha Underground, kind of got the rails greased for this broken Matt Hardy thing. Cause
You know what's funny? Because I was thinking about that, and me and Jeremy both watched it. Lucha Underground seems like New Japan Pro Wrestling compared to the stuff Matt Hardy's doing. And that's somewhere where you have a dragon breathing fire. And a Mexican luchador that's like an astronaut. Like, he travels through space like the Silver Surfer. So, that's when people have really been murdered, where, you know, it's more believable that Joey Ryan could be an undercover police officer that's trying to, you know, conduct a sting on the commissioner of Lucha Underground. Like, yeah, I can wrap my head around that. I can believe that, you know, these guys leaving Mexico to become ninjas and getting trained in Japan with no problem. Way more than I can believe Matt Hardy running around shooting people with fireworks and his wife playing the piano like she's Beethoven on crack. And I give kudos to Matt Hardy. Like, if you play something like that, you can't half-ass it.
And oh, yeah.
He just dove right in. It's kind of like he's probably having a blast. I can imagine how much money he's made just doing this. And you always thought Jeff Hardy was the weird one. And we realized, no. Jeff Hardy was just the one who just used to use drugs. Matt Hardy was the weird one.
Well, yeah, Matt Hardy definitely had his weird moments there right before his release from the WWE. But, yeah, it was never the consistency that Jeff Hardy brought.
Yeah, Matt Hardy always seemed like, you know, the guy that, like, comics that tried too hard. But not this level of batshit weirdness. It's kind of like, yeah. And we remember how it started. Like, you know, they had a match, and he went through the table. Like, when they had a match on Impact, and he did a swanton through the table. And then this whole, I'm broken, and talking a goofy accent. Everybody was like, what the hell is going on? And I remember when it happened, and it just escalated, and somehow Jeff got involved, and they had the first one with shooting fireworks and exploding cymbals and the gardener and all this. And when Ruby Scott threw the baby at Jeff, ended up being a baby doll to distract him so Matt can push him through a table. And Jeff was like, what the hell is wrong with you people? Like, I remember Jeff Hardy being the voice of reason when this whole thing started. And I'm like, yeah, a lot of stuff has I've missed from TNA since the last time I watched. Like between that and Bobby Lashley somehow becoming, you know, Brock Lesnar. Like a lot of stuff I have missed. So I guess the fact that we spent 10 minutes talking about Matt Hardy, it shows that Matt Hardy is the story of the year. We spent so much time talking about that. So, and kudos. Like, second place for me would be Goldberg, because who would have guessed?
Yeah, I mean, everyone, it is kind of funny, just because, well, we kind of weaved it into the conversation, but there's definitely always a recency bias in what could be the best. But Goldberg's win over Brock Lesnar is still one of those things that it really came out of nowhere. Like, I'm just sitting there and I'm like, holy shit, this match is over. Like, I never expected that. Not even a little bit. And, and I mean, he was way over for it. I mean, everyone was worried about where he was, where the match was going to be, because it wasn't Bill Goldberg territory. But, man, people ate that win up.
It's funny. I know, it's funny, like, when I heard people talk about it, and I don't know if it was just because of WWE, his first one, like, spoiled how people thought about him or anything. It was a lot of people, like, discounting Goldberg, like, he wasn't a big deal. I'm like, no. I was around. I lived in North Carolina during when WCW's hot. Bill Goldberg was a big-ass deal. Like, I know it's been a long time, and I know how they treated him the first time he came back, but it's like, this isn't Scott Steiner coming back or some nonsense. Like, this isn't, you know, Kevin Nash. Like, this is Bill Goldberg. And then you think about, like, you know, people just, I was gobsmacked myself. It's kind of like, it was the right thing, but you wouldn't think they had the balls to do it. Because it's like, this is Brock Lesnar that's here. Like, he's the guy that squashed John Cena at SummerSlam. Like, the guy that basically squashes everybody he's running to. You're thinking, okay, they're going to have a one-off. He's going to have a volume fight, lose, go away. He beat him in like a minute. And I'm sitting here like, am I really watching this? And the crowd had the same thing. Like, you know, you hoping you're going to see it, but you don't think you're going to see it, because it's like, it's WWE. They're not going to let him just squash Brock Lesnar like this. He just squashed him. And then it was funny how Goldberg fans ate it up. But it was a lot of fans like, oh, I got robbed. I want to see a drawn up. Like, nobody want to see a 20-minute match with Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. Like, did you forget WrestleMania 20 back when they were young and how that match looked? Like, you really want to see 49-year-old Bill Goldberg get suplexed 9 times by Brock Lesnar and die? Like, no thanks.
Yeah, I didn't want to see it, and I'm glad we didn't see it. I mean, having a shocking moment like that is not a bad thing. So, and honestly, like, again, like, the WWE needs these kind of people to kind of, you know, hold down some big pay-per-views. They still have some money value in them. I mean, we're getting more Bill Goldberg because of how well that went.
Yeah, like, the crowd ate it up. I think when he came back to Colorado and cut that off, like, that he cut the best promo he's ever cut, like, by far. And he sounded like it was, the whole setup was perfect. And I think people were, like, shocked, like, how well it worked. It's kind of like, oh, when you treat people special and let them be special, people will like that. And I remember Meltzer saying it was set up like that, like they did it on purpose, because people would just assume, oh, you know, if the match starts at 20 after the hour, you know, it's going to go 20, 25 minutes, so you don't have to worry about anything. It's like, we want to do it like UFC sometimes, where anything can happen and have like a shock fight. So now, so you know, knock the complacency out of the fans. Like, they basically just have to play with the fans' emotions, because they know how the fans who watch kind of know how the pay-per-views normally go. And I found it fascinating that they did that, because it shows that there's some people there that's like, you know, Triple H knows what he's doing. And to a certain extent, Vince knows too. Because I know people love to say, like, maybe Vince isn't running right in SmackDown because SmackDown looks so much better. Like, no. He does both. Just for whatever reason, I think SmackDown's just done better because the people that's pushed are pushed properly. And he's not stubborn with them like he is with, you know, Raw people. Like, the same guy that's pushing Roman Reigns is pushing AJ Styles. And I know it's hard for people to believe because, like, that makes no sense whatsoever. But it's kind of like, he didn't get where he was by being, you know, he makes mistakes and he's stubborn. He didn't get where he got by being an idiot. Because, you know, Paul Heyman works for him. Eric Bischoff used to work for him. You know, he never worked for Dixie Carter. Like, all these people that supposedly smarter than him are, like, out of business or working for him. It's like, he's been around for a long time. And the whole thing with, like, Goldberg is just, it worked. And Brock Lesnar's a kid, like, as long as the check clears, he doesn't mind doing it. Like, I can get paid again. And I'm curious to see what happens at the Royal Rumble. Because I'm curious to see them again at the Royal Rumble. And then where that leads to Mania. But, yeah. The fact that almost 50 years old, a man that hadn't, like, wrestled full-time in, what, 15 years? Well, let's see.
Was it 12 years?
He left WCW. No. Because even the WWE run, It wasn't really, like, it was, like, a year. And it was kind of like, he had maybe, what, 6 matches? It seemed like?
Yeah, not many.
Yeah. Like, he wrestled The Rock. He wrestled a couple, like, 6-man matches. He wrestled Triple H twice. He was in the Royal Rumble. He wrestled Lesnar. Like, he had maybe, what, 6 to 8 matches. So, he was probably in WCW up until, what, 99, 2000. So, he hadn't wrestled full-time in maybe 15 to 16 years. And he's almost 50. Like, he looked like your dad. He, like, if you had a dad that had a midlife crisis and got a gym membership and took it seriously. That's how Bill Goldberg looked. For him to be a thing in 2016 and wrestle Brock Lesnar, who is still a thing, which is kind of surprising myself, got to be my second biggest story.
Well, I think we can leave our big stories here then. It seems like a good time to shut things down.
Oh, and a quick thing before we go. The bronze medal would definitely go to James Ellsworth. Living the dream.
Yeah, that... I mean, like you said earlier about him and Carmella, like, just when you think he's out, somehow I'm like, where the hell are they going with this? Like, and again, second week in a row, they kind of leave you going, where's this going?
But you want to know where it's going.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good kind of where's this going, not what the fuck is going on here.
Yeah, just think about where we go. We all remember when they had the draft and he came, Russell Braun Strowman. And he got this whole, any man with two hands has a chance. Who would have guessed from watching that it would lead to this? Like, he's basically, like, if he manages his money right, he's going to make a lot of money on the indie scene whenever his WWE contract runs out. Like, he could be good for, like, life, looking the way he looks. Like, he could say, I got to wrestle with AJ Styles. I pout around with Dean Ambrose. I'm hanging with Carmella. Like, yeah, Carmella is not ugly at all. Nope. And just seeing that whole juxtaposition is kind of like, how? I just don't want, like, I could just imagine if I was like Apollo Crews. And I'm just on SmackDown, like, I'm here stuck, like, before I had my match with The Miz, I wasn't doing anything. I'm chilling eating that catering with Brizango. And this chinless doofus is being in the main event, has his own Titantron and t-shirt, and he's hanging with Carmella, like, only in professional wrestling.
Oh, I could not say it better. So, for at DeFrango11 and at Shaw Farm D, the brand at Stunt Granny, I will let you send it away then.
For Kevin DeFrango, I'm Shahid Abdulhadi. I hope you enjoy 2016. Don't die like half the people seem to die. And let's have a better 2017. We are out.